Welcome to episode 162 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. So another ad lib episode this week. It's been a pretty busy week, a few weeks actually, a few months actually. I basically, you know, my day job's kept me really busy, and you know, there's been a number of things that's been going off in my photography as well that have really just taken up a lot of my time. So this week I'm like five or six days late in recording. I'm probably going to try and get another episode out next week so that we can catch up, but I thought today we'd just take a look at a few images that I shot in during a visit to the Nikko area a few weeks ago. You're going to hear me clicking around because I've literally just thrown six of the images into the podcast feed that I use and then publish later when I've got the audio ready. And so I'm going to be clicking around as we do this, but let's jump into it and take a look at some of the first autumn colour of 2008 and also some waterfall shots that I made in the area as well. On the 11th of October in 2008, for the sake of those catching up on the archives later, I decided it was actually a 3-day weekend. The Monday, the following Monday, the 13th, was going to be a holiday. And so having finished a few jobs on the Saturday, on the 11th, I decided to jump in the car and go over to the Nikko area. And this was basically sort of, I think I jumped in the car at 10 p.m., and it's a good 2.5 or maybe a little bit more hours drive, and you know, basically just drive over there. The roads were going to be clear because it was you know, late at night, but actually, you know, we were climbing up the hill into the you know, the top area in the Nikko area, and with cars around us, so you know, we weren't the only people with the same idea. And of course the fall color that was just coming in at this time had been on the news as well, and so people were obviously heading up there. And you know, it actually turns out that this was not such a good idea because the area was totally packed the following day. But you know, it meant that we got a good clear run up there. But basically, I think slept from around maybe 1:30 a.m. until about 4:30. It's never very good quality sleep in a car, you know, although the seats in my car sort of go down to full flat, they're all bumpy, and you know, it's not an ideal place to sleep. So you know, I always feel a bit rough on these days. But as the sun sort of, you know, got close to the horizon to come up above the horizon, we had a drive around, found a few spots that might be good. But you know, the fall color is very sort of sporadic in this area, and it wasn't, you know, there in a lot of the places that I was thinking of, and everything had been such a sort of a rushed thing with very little planning, so you know, I didn't really know what to expect. But I spent the first sort of maybe hour of the daylight shooting the edge of a lake in the mountains. And that was, you know, it was nice, but it was, you know, the trees weren't that good. I did get the 600mm out because there were some herons, some blue herons in the trees, and I'd been photographing those as well. But you know, the results were just they were okay, but nothing worth writing home about. So I haven't even bothered to upload those to the website. And then after that, what I did was jumped in the car and started to drive back down towards the Ryuzu no Taki, which is Ryuzu Falls. I've spoken about this before. The words for Ryuzu, actually, it's Dragon Head. I don't know if you may remember this from an earlier podcast. But basically, you know, by this time, it was, I think it was like 7:30, just after 7 maybe, when we started to go down there. The car park at the top of where you get some rapids that start to flow down towards the Ryuzu Falls, they that car park was full already. And you know, so the other option was to go down to the falls themselves and then walk up the side, and that's what we did. But literally had to just park at the side of the road, and it was okay when I got there because there was lots of other cars that had done the same thing. When I got back there a few hours later, after shooting the images that we're going to look at, our car was the only one there. So I'm really surprised I didn't have a ticket, but you know, luckily there wasn't one. But basically what we did was parked up and then walked up there's a footpath that's like either a steep path or stairs that works its way up the side of the river. And we can see that river in image number 1944. So as you look at this image, you know, we can see, clicking around here again, you'll be able to hear my mouse. We can see the river sort of winding off down the left-hand side of the image. And that bank of trees and to the left is where the footpath is. So it's literally, there's maybe, I don't know, 20, 30 feet or so of trees, and then there's a footpath. So it's nicely hidden. But it's, you know, basically that's where we walked up. And the, you know, we walked up, if in the very distance, you can see a little bit of river. That's the Chuzenji Lake. And that is roughly the level, the height, the altitude from which we walked. It's not a huge walk, but it's a nice morning walk, especially after 3 hours of rough sleep. So we sort of got up here and a little woke us up a little bit, and basically, you know, started to shoot. This is shooting from the bridge that's right next to the car park that we just passed and had found full. So, you know, a little bit of exercise getting up here, and you can see that we've got the red leaves on the right-hand side there, looking pretty nice. It's a strange place because it gets cold quickly here. It's one of the first places to get the autumn colour because of the altitude. But then, you know, it does because you get the warm days and then the cold nights. You get these really nice fiery reds. But also, you know, the trees become bare quickly as well. This was a few weeks ago, and I'm sure that these trees are totally bare now. And you can also see that the other trees to the a little bit higher on the right there are losing their leaves. You know, all of the deciduous ones at least. But it, you know, the sun's high enough at this point. Let me just scroll down. I think it was just before 8 a.m. Excuse me. So 7:58, just before 8 a.m. And the sun is high enough now to be hitting most of the water, but the trees on the left there have got a bit of shadow. But, you know, nothing to really worry about too much. We can also see, I chose this one out of a few shots. And this one actually has, it's probably about 10 pixels in total in the size that you'll be looking at. But there's a small sort of grayish white speck kind of in the middle of the river as it goes off into the distance. And that's a person standing on a rock taking photos further down the river. And I actually, the next image that we'll look at is from exactly that spot. And we, you know, we'll get to that in a moment. But I chose this just for a little bit of scale and also to, you know, just to add a little bit of something. It's probably worth having there on a print. The website, web sized is probably not going to be that effective. But basically, you know, let's take a look at the settings. We can see that I was shooting with the 24 to 70 millimeter f/2.8 lens, and I had closed the aperture down to f/16. And the reason that I'd done that was because I wanted to get a slow enough shutter speed, which was 15th of a second, incidentally. I wanted to get a slow enough shutter speed to make the water, you know, not be totally frozen, give us a little bit of flowing feeling, but not sort of, you know, not really overdoing it for this one. It was a nice sort of crisp morning. I just wanted to capture that really. But, you know, I don't normally go much lower than this. I try not to go lower than f/16. But with the 24 to 70, it's still acceptable. The longer lenses, like the 70 to 200, I try to only ever go down to f/11. You know, things really do start to soften up after that. But, you know, the other things that I wanted to mention about this, you know, composition-wise, we can see that I've placed these two boulders over in the bottom left, and obviously tried to sort of keep the line of trees across the middle, sort of up in, you know, going up into the top half of the image. And the river, you know, you can walk along this bridge to pretty much any point, and you know, so you can choose your angle. You might have to wait. There was a lot of people on this bridge, you know. As I say, the car park was full, but you can basically walk along and choose where you shoot from. And so I sort of chose this spot and the angle that I used, the focal length, so that the boulders were where they are, with the trees going along, taking up the right 2/3 of the shot, with the river sort of flowing off into the left third line. And that also obviously gives us the bit of lake in the distance there. I've actually made use of the new Lightroom 2 gradual neutral density filter for this. Not done this in camera, but basically to bring out the sky a little bit, I've used a neutral density filter a diagonal neutral density along the top of the line of the right hand side trees, and that just helped me to bring out a little bit of more blue in the sky, and make the clouds pop out just a little bit. But it's, you know, at 8 a.m. On this day, it was starting to get pretty hazy in the distance there, so this was about as much as I wanted to bring out. But it, you know, it's nice to have those tools in Lightroom and be able to just quickly add a neutral density filter to your images. What I want to do now, and you're going to be hearing me clicking around again, is move on to one more image. And this is from that spot that I just mentioned, and it's image number 1946. This image was also shot with the 24-70 f/2.8 lens. You can see now that I've zoomed out. I think I'm at 25 millimeters. So also almost fully wide open for this lens. And while I'm looking at the EXIF data, the f number's f/11 for this now, and that gives me a 50th of a second exposure time, shutter speed. I'm at ISO 200, and the reason for that is so that I can sort of, I was using the highlight priority, but that does of course give me, more frozen water. There's, not quite so much running water effect. But this, what actually happened here was, I shot this with the lens that was on the camera at the time, opened it up to 20, almost 20, 24, very wide. And then, we can see that I've got some like brownish orange foliage in the left foreground there as well. I've included all of that for scale and to sort of, to give us an idea of sort of, where I am. I was just sort of sitting on a rock with the tripod sort of opened up across, around my legs. But then what I did after this was I got the 16-35 out, because I was already, within the range of that. And I put the Singray variable neutral density filter on, and I was just about to make my exposure, and a guy jumped down on that other rock in the foreground after the yellowy brown leaves, and so I had to wait and wait and wait, and so basically, this guy was there for ages, and he looked around a few times, and I gestured that I was waiting, and he didn't really seem to care, but he got out of the way, and as he did, another guy jumped down there, and so I ended up sort of sitting here for, I think, 20, 30 minutes, maybe a little bit less, but I knew that, I was going to be getting some rolling eyes from my missus when I got back over to the path, and so I decided that, I wasn't going to wait and get the slow running water image here. I just gave up after a while and left. Obviously it's not my spot. I can't sort of demand that people move or anything. Waiting is the only thing to do. It would have been nice if these people had have realized that they were sitting in my shot. They could see that I was just waiting. I think if it was me, I would have jumped out of the way and let the person waiting get a few frames off. But you know, that wasn't to be. But you can see again here, you know, lots of nice color, nice clear water in the foreground here, and then the color of the trees. You know, not spectacular, but I thought it was good enough to upload to the website. And we see a little bit more of the lake here in the distance. And again, I've used the neutral density filter in Lightroom 2, 2.1 actually now, to just sort of bring out the a little bit more colour in the sky. I think that's about all I wanted to say about this one. I guess, you know, I should mention, you know, we've got here, as I said earlier, f11. With a wide-angle lens, f11 is plenty for us to get. I wasn't using hyperfocal distance as such, if I recall correctly, at least. But, you know, basically open up to f11 and everything from a few feet in front of the lens until infinity is going to be in focus on this sort of shot, you know, with 25 millimeters. So it was, you know, basically, nice sharp shot from foreground to background. And it's always strange for me because, you know, I'm always looking for very shallow depth of field in a lot of my work. But as soon as I switch into like a landscape mode, I'm trying to get nice sharp focus. And we can see the detail in the leaves in the foreground right through to the texture in on the mountains in the background. And talking of shallow depth of field, we're going to step back chronologically at least to image number 1945 now. And look at a shot that I made a few moments before, the last one that we looked at. And this is basically, it's a birch tree's bark, you know, the white bark. And I love these trees. It's definitely one of my favorite trees and make it into a lot of my shots. But I noticed the bark, the white bark there. And then there was a patch of red on the opposite bank that I was able to sort of get into the shot. So I decided to throw that way out of focus by selecting an aperture of 3.5, and this was with the 70-200mm f2.8 lens. And that, again, I'm using highlight priority here so that I don't blow the whites on the tree trunk. So I'm using ISO 200, and that actually with a 3.5 aperture gave me an exposure of 0.002 seconds, so very fast shutter speed here. But that really just gave me, you know, the background became a nice sort of blotchy, patchy red, just lots of nice bokeh in there. And this is the sort of shot that I like. I actually wanted to quickly mention that I was using the camera profiles, the beta version of the camera profiles for Lightroom here. And this is something that's relatively new from Adobe. And I hadn't tried it until very recently. I think it's the beta 2 version, the most recent one that I've just started using. And this is the landscape profile. And this, it kind of is, it's very much like the landscape picture style that you can use with Canon cameras, the picture styles that they have built into the cameras. But of course, to be able to use those, you actually have to use the Digital Photo Professional software that comes bundled with Canon cameras. And I hate that piece of software, and so I really don't want to be getting into that. And so what I've been doing for a long time now is using a Lightroom preset that I created myself that basically just bumps up the red saturation quite a bit, and the green and the blue also, but not as much as the red. And that gave me something very similar to what we're looking at here, but there was a subtle difference. And it was pretty difficult to get, but I was sort of happy with the preset, and so I've been using that for a while now. But the landscape camera profile that we have in the beta profiles is probably closer to the landscape picture style. And also, you know, these are all, in my opinion at least, emulating the Fujichrome Velvia film, the positive film, or slide film that I used to use in my film days. And so, you know, I like this look, nice rich reds. And the, you know, basically I think I'm going to be using this for landscape and most work, probably not for portraits. There is a portrait profile as well that I tried on some recent work, but I didn't like that very much. But the landscape profile is definitely got a place in my workflow, for now at least. So I've started to use that. I'm actually applying that on import now, and this is the result on this image. I've also had to sort of, you know, although I'm using the highlight tone priority, there is a little bit of blown out white in the highlights on the bark there, but it's white, so I'm not too worried about that, and you know, just help that out a little bit in Lightroom. But I think I use the recovery slider to sort of, you know, to bring the histogram back under control, and lost a tiny bit of detail in some of the very, very, you know, bright areas of that bark. But apart from that, it's, you know, I'm quite pleased with this image. I like the way it, you know, the bark is sort of, the edge of the bark is highlighted, or the edge of the tree trunk is highlighted by the reds. And then as you come over to the left, we've got a nice patch of dark to sort of close off the left side of the image. And from there, we'll move on. Let me just click back. Basically, you know, I've called this this podcast, I'm going to call it the first autumn color of 2008. But I'm only going to talk about the autumn color for one more image. I think I said three earlier, and I'd forgotten about this one of the white with the white bark. But after this this walk along the edge of the river down to the Ryuzu Falls, we jumped in the car, and then made our way through the traffic jam that was literally, there was people everywhere by this time, and we decided that it was just not going to be worth spending the day in the area. But strangely enough, and this I guess it's not strange, it's the power of TV. One of the reasons that we were here is because my wife had mentioned that Ryuzu Falls were in good color, and that had been, she'd seen that on the TV, and so, you know, we came up for that. But of course, everyone else in Japan had seen the same TV, and so the place was just packed, and you know, there were people making their way up here. But again, the power of TV, it's like they were all just coming to the falls, and so we figured that the other spots, beauty spots in the area, might not be so packed, and so we decided to pull into the Kegon Falls, or Kegon no Taki. We pulled into the car park of that on the way through the town, and you know, sure enough, there was very few people there. So we decided to jump out and see what was happening there. I've spoken about these falls too in the past. I think one of them was when I was talking about a rainbow that you sometimes see there. But you go down, you pay a certain amount. I forget how much it is. It's not cheap. I think it's about $10 each or something. And you actually get into an elevator, and they take you down through the rock in the side of the cliff to a place where you can, you've got three various layers of vantage point that you can basically set your tripod up and shoot away. And I wanted to just look at a few images from there. The last one of fall color is image number 1947. This is actually it's looking down from the left of the platforms from which you can shoot the main falls. And so, you know, what I've done here is I've sort of looked over and seen that there's some nice red leaves amongst the yellow and green. But also there, you know, you can see like a little patch of the river that's flowing off from the falls. And there was this one patch of brightly coloured autumn leaves on the other side, you know, a tree. That I thought might make a nice shot. You know, it's a bit of a contrast here. We've got a bright foreground and then the part of the river going through the middle, and then a relatively dark upper half. But then there's this one tree up there that I thought sort of made a nice contrast. So, you know, I'm not sure. I like the overall aesthetic of this image. I'm not sure if it's one of my favorites, but it's one that I thought worked relatively well. To just look down at the EXIF data, you can see that I've shot this with the 24 to 70 millimeter again. The aperture for this was f11, and the shutter speed was 0.4 of a second. And basically, I was up to ISO 100 here again. I wanted to I wanted to try and get a little bit of the flowing effect in the water that we do see in the bottom of the, well, in the middle to the left of the frame there. One other thing that I wanted to mention here is that I used the fill light slider this time in Lightroom to just sort of fill back in a little bit of the sort of brown tree area that we see on the left, and the top left, and over to a little bit of the top right of the image. Although I like the contrast, in the original there was really quite a lot of contrast, and the top left of like quadrant, I would imagine, of the image was pretty dark. So I've just sort of brought that back out a little bit to even reduce the contrast, and generally felt that that was better and gave the shot better overall balance. That's it though for the fall color. What I wanted to do is move on to a couple of other images, and let me just sort of go back. I often, when I'm faced with waterfalls, I didn't actually upload a full size, a full shot of the entire falls from this trip. I've shot these falls a number of times, and they were pretty uneventful on this day. Nothing to shout about. But what I often do when I go to any falls is get out a long telephoto and try to sort of pick out some areas of the falls that might be of some interest. And in image number 1948, we see the first one of those images. I used the 300mm f2.8 for this shot. And basically what I did was just sort of, start looking through the viewfinder and pointed at where I think might be interesting, and then sort of fine-tune the composition. And what I've done here is I've found an area where the water hits the rock for the first point after a long drop. And so, we've got the rock. I've placed that sort of on the left there. We can see that's like 2/3 up of the frame, up into the frame. And then there's a bit of rock on the other side. And here I'm really just sort of trying to show the sheer power of this, or I've actually called this Kegon Falls raw power. And you can just sort of see that, the water is just smashing down into the rock. And we've got some sort of spray coming off, and the roughness of the water. And to show that, these are the things I wanted to really talk about with these three fall shots that we're going to look at. For this one, I chose an aperture of f2.8, which gave me an exposure of 1/400 of a second, and that's at ISO 100. And of course, 1/400 of a second is going to pretty much freeze the water. And although it's falling quite a long way, we can see that a fair amount of detail and texture in the water as it sort of hits these rocks and splashes up. But then as we move on to the next image, let me go back and check the number. I tried something that I've not done before. The image is number 1950. Basically, we have a long drop of water here. I'm not going to go off and find the statistics, but it's a relatively huge fall, but it's very narrow. It's only a small, maybe a few meters wide, the actual expanse of water, but it drops for a long, long way. So I figured while I'm there looking through the 300mm, and I thought it would be fun to try panning with the water. And, rather than sort of letting the water flow, basically I selected a shutter speed of 0.25 of a second at f11. And that was obviously going to be enough for me to allow you to see the flowing of the water. You need like from between 0.25 to 0.15 of a second to make these to make the water look like it's flowing, and obviously the slower shutter speed, the more silky sort of that effect's going to get. But I figured that I would try panning with the water and allowing the edges of the falls to move, and that's basically what you see here. And I thought it was a pretty interesting effect, because what we're doing is, you know, the water is sort of flows and builds as it drops. So we can see some like white water, this flowing sort of, it reminds me a little bit of those white horses on the Guinness advert that used to be out a few years ago. But basically, you know, the water's there building and falling along, but I'm moving with that motion here. So the edges of the falls, we've got a little bit of texture, but it's streaking off upwards. So I really quite like this this effect, and I'm definitely going to try to do this again if I get to areas where there are falls with a relatively long expanse of a long drop that you can work with. Most of the falls that I've shot don't have this distance, but you know this one does, and so I thought it was good to play with. But you know, basically, that's one of the things that I wanted to talk about here. I've spoken about panning before, and always in the past I've been talking about horizontal panning, and this is the first time I've done vertical panning, and it was pretty fun. I mean, basically, I used the tripod, and I'd got the BH -55 really right stuff ball head on there, so there was nothing really to control the left and right, or the tilt or anything of the lens, other than myself just trying to keep it straight. But the support was there, and the BH-55 actually has like a tension knob as well, so you can apply a little bit of tension to stop it from just freely rolling and rocking and rolling around, which helped. But it was not that difficult to control. Sometimes it went off. I think I shot about 20 images like this, just following the water down, and then just clicking off 4 or 5 frames as I got into a nice smooth motion. The other thing that, you know, we've mentioned before about panning is don't just shoot or don't just release the shutter at the point that you think you want the shot, because the action of actually tripping the shutter is it kind of, you get this unconscious some sort of a shudder. And so, you know, what I generally do, more like a golf swing, you don't sort of just stop after you've released the shutter either. You start the swing, you start the motion, and then hit the ball or start to sort of shoot off a few frames. And then after you've taken your finger off the shutter release, you then continue to pan, just so that you keep the flow like a golf swing, as I say. And that helps you to get a nice smooth panning motion. And it resulted in here, at least, what I think is a relatively nice shot. And this looks, it's one, another one of those that's just great to peer into in a large print. And the other thing that I did, I want to show you this. We're going to move on to image number 1951 now. And basically here, what I've done is I've stopped again. I've stopped panning and gone back to the place, roughly the place where that I shot the, or that was very similar, slightly to the right, but very similar composition to the first of these three images that we looked at. And here I've kept the f11 aperture with a shutter speed of 1/25th of a second. So now we can see how the water looks if the camera's still, and we allow the flowing of the water to register there. So not an incredibly long exposure. I didn't think that was going to work. So you know, you can see a bit of movement, but not a hell of a lot in the water. But you get that silky look that I also do like. So, you know, with this sheer sort of volume of water that's just smashing down onto these rocks here, I thought this also made a nice image for the series. And let's see, there was something else. Oh yeah, one other thing that I wanted to point out here was that I also in Lightroom, to really give this a bit of punch, I grabbed the black slider, and I think I went up to like 15 or maybe even 20 on the black slider there. And that helped to sort of bring out the black in the rocks and a little bit more texture and contrast. It was a little bit flat without that. So, really sort of to make this pop out at me, I needed a little bit of you know, compression in the blacks there, and that's just something else that I wanted to touch on. But that's really it. Like I say, an ad lib episode today. I didn't have time to. I think one of the main things is that I've been doing a few things over this last few weeks. One very important thing that's been happening last week. I'm not going to go into details. I don't want to jinx it. But that took up a lot of my time. Plus, playing with a few new lenses. I'm going to get into looking at some images of these soon. But I recently picked up the 135mm f2 and also the 90mm TSE lens, which I'm having a lot of fun with. I tried to get out with them over this weekend, but I decided that I was going to output all of my images with a new frame from Lightroom. And that is something that was only possible because of a new plugin that's been made available. And this was basically, it was originally, we heard about this in the martinbaileyphotography.com forum. One of our major sort of contributors and participants, a gentleman called David Lee, also lives here in Japan as well. He came in a few weeks ago, he told us a few weeks ago about this this plugin called LR2 Mogrify. And basically what this is a guy called Timothy Arms has created a number of plugins for Lightroom 2. And I believe this one actually was available for Lightroom 1, but from Lightroom 2, I heard about this from David. And it's an excellent plugin. It basically allows you to set, to resize, sharpen, and set a frame. You can just select multiple elements of the frame. Like what I generally do is have a 1 pixel gray border around the image, and then a white frame, and then have another gray border, and that helps me to sort of to make the frame sort of stand out a little bit like a matte. But also it's so that when I use the same images to drop them into the podcast here, you can actually see the frame as if it's paper, and rather than just sort of have the white frame blend off into the white background that we see on the iPod screen or in iTunes. But basically, guy Timothy Tim Arms, he requests donations for the plugin, and having had a play with this, figured that it was like a dream come true, and it was really sort of helping me to do everything. I mean, the only reason that I was jumping into Photoshop for many of my images was to run a script an automation script that I'd created to add a frame and save off a few copies. Well, now I don't need to do that. I can just do this in this LR2 Mogrify. So I decided to give a donation, but what I really wanted to do was to emulate what I'm calling the fine art matte sort of print that I do, and that is where I move the print up the page slightly, and that gives me space to actually apply a stamp, a square stamp that I use, and then sign the images. And I also use that with a C in a circle for the copyright, and that's for my web versions. But basically, I wanted to make a little bit of room for that. And so I asked Tim if he could possibly sort of, add the features to allow you to offset the image within the frame. And within the next morning, I'd received an email asking me if I wanted to test a new version. Did that. There were a few issues, but then that following day, over the next sort of 24 hours, Tim did a number of releases and fixed all of the issues. And basically, now I can add an offset frame, and it's just perfect. It's exactly what I wanted. And I actually went back and made a second donation because I just, very, very grateful to Tim for the work that he was putting in there. I'm sure it wasn't only me that was asking for this functionality, but it was great that he put it in so quickly as well. But what that led me to do was to go through and organize all of my images that I've got. For the first few years that I was posting images on my website, my workflow was not as smooth as it is now. And so I used to output a few, and you know, output the images, take them into Photoshop, and then save them off and give them a name when I saved them. I always tried to leave the number of the photo in there, you know, like the four digits of the image, the file name that your camera saves the images with. So I had a little bit of an identifier, but they obviously, you know, they're not going to help for images that you scanned in and things like that. So basically, I'd sort of lost the logical link to a lot of the original images. And so I spent the whole day yesterday, although I was hoping to get out photographing. It was pretty dreary weather as well, but I spent the whole day basically just going through and finding all of the old images for hundreds of photographs that I'd got uploaded onto my website, but didn't really know where the original was. So that literally took like the whole day. But then when I'd done that, I was able to just go through and run this LR2 Mogrify on some 1,500 images and just reframe everything. It had been really bugging me that I had no, some frames, some of the older photos had no frames. Some had one with a drop shadow that I was using for a while. And then others had the, you know, something similar to what I use now, but without the gray single pixel two frames that are like a matte. And so it was a bit of a mishmash of various frames from the evolution of my website. But I decided that I just wanted to get them all the same. And so I went through this exercise, and it was a pretty big job, and, you know, made me appreciate how being organized, I have been organized for the last few years, but before that, not so. And so it really made me appreciate how easy life gets when you are organized. Because now, you know, if I want to do the same thing again with, just batch frame everything as my tastes change, I can go in and do that again very, very easily. So a big job there. Maybe something to be learned, you know, if you do something similar to me where you don't keep an eye on where your originals came from for a while, then it becomes a big job years down the road. And like I say, although I've been pretty organized for a while now, this thing's been playing on my mind, and I've been meaning to get to this for a while. So it was a good chance to do that yesterday. The other thing, though, is that, and this is one of the reasons why I've done this ad hoc today, is because I'd actually bought the Adobe Creative Suite for Design Premium Suite. So I've now got a new toy to sort of play with. I've been looking through some of the tutorials this morning. CS4 Photoshop extendeds in there, and I haven't played with it yet, other than to just launch it and take a quick look. The UI has changed a lot. It's very, it's very different, and I like it. I don't know what a lot of the stuff does yet, and I don't know if I'll be doing anything on this in the podcast. But if there's things that start to stand out to me, I'm sure I'll mention those to you in a few weeks. But it's kind of ironic that, you know, I've bought this now at a time when I've just put myself in a position where I don't even have to launch Photoshop for every image. But there are, you know, there's a small percentage of images that I do want to do a little bit more work on than Lightroom will allow me to. So I still would not like to be without a version of Photoshop. But also, it's the first time I've bought a suite. I used to own Illustrator a few years ago, and I'm talking maybe 10 years ago. But I really sort of, I miss not having Illustrator and not having the ability to create PDFs, with Acrobat Pro was something that had also been getting at me a little bit. And so I figured it was time to buy into a suite. I couldn't think of any. I didn't really want to buy into the suite with CS3 because I'd already bought Photoshop. And, you know, there's not really any good deals for upgrading when you've already got part of the suite. But I use the upgrade for someone that has a single suite application, which was CS3 for me, obviously. So I think it was $1,398 or something from B&H, and I think that's the same price that they're quoting for most places. But that was the upsell from a single product, and so I thought it was a good time to jump in and get my feet wet with a whole suite and grab some of the tools that I've been hoping to use for a while. And of course, there's InDesign in there and Fireworks and a few other things. So, you know, who knows, if I can find the time, we might end up with an overall for the website as well. And this will really help me to put together publications. For a while, I've been hoping to sort of do better articles from the Martin Bailey Photography sort of website, and maybe to support some of the things that we do. I might even, now that I've got this, I might even think again about whether or not to start to release the transcripts for the podcasts. I probably wouldn't do that for all, but for some of the more technical ones, I could now create a better transcript document. So there's a few things that might come along from me now jumping into the suite world rather than just a single product of Photoshop. Anyway, rambling on way too much here. I'll get off, and we'll speak again in a few days, hopefully. Okay, so that's it for today. Sorry for the voice. I've been overdoing it a little bit. I've got a bit of a husky voice today. Probably coming down with something. So sorry about that. But basically, a couple of things I wanted to mention before we wrap up. One is the LR2 Mogrify plugin that I mentioned can be found at Timothy Arms, and that's ARMES.com. And I'll put a link to that and directly to the LR2 Mogrify page in the show notes. I also wanted to thank all of you that have voted over the last week for the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast in the podcast awards. And, obviously I think the winners are going to be announced later today. I don't expect to win, but I do, I always am very, very happy that we even get to the point where people are voting for us. In the education section, there's only me and Chris Marquardt of Tips from the Top Floor fame that are actually photography related podcasts, I believe, anyway. It's always a great honor for me to even get that far. So thanks for those that voted initially, but then for everyone that's voted every day over this last few weeks, thank you very much for that again. The other thing was I actually forgot to turn on the voting system for the agriculture album on the mbpgalleries.com website. I knew that this was coming up, but it kind of got away from me, so I was a few days late turning that on. But it's now the voting is now in progress. I'm going to just have another click around here and just check the dates while we're talking. But you'll have one more week from today, and I will be there in a moment. Where are we? Agriculture assignment. Here we go. So the voting is now on, and you will be able to vote until the end of Sunday, the 16th of November. You have to be a member to vote. But if obviously that's free. If you're not already a member, please do sign up at mbpgalleries.com and locate the agriculture assignment halfway down the page. Go in there and you'll see some vote buttons, and then you can award a first, second, and third status to three images. You can't vote for the same image more than once, and you can only vote for up to three, but basically use the vote buttons to select your favorite three. I actually didn't even get an image in for this one. It's the first time this has happened, maybe ever, but at least for a while. I was hoping to get some stop off. My plan was to get off the highway on my way back into Tokyo at some point when I've been out of town, photographing. But the one time that I did that was on the way back from Nikko, where I shot the images that we looked at today. But the place that I was planning on getting off, there was a traffic jam, and it would have taken a long time to get off and even longer to get back on the highway. So I ended up giving that a miss, and that was my last chance. Things have just been so hectic, so didn't get a chance to shoot for this myself. I think there was only some 25 or so images that were uploaded, so you know, I think many people found it difficult to shoot for this. But as usual, the you know, the quality of images that's been uploaded is very high, so I do encourage you to come along and take a look and cast your votes. But that's about it for today. Pretty long podcast for an ad hoc one. I tend to ramble more, I think, so sorry about that. But that's it for today, and we'll catch up again, hopefully, during the next week. So you have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.
PhotoCastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotoCastNetwork.com.